Hello there. This is Chris Carruthers on Radio Winchcombe, and you're listening to Community Voice, giving centre stage to groups in the local community. Today, I'm at the Dogs Trust at Wickhamford near Evesham, and I've got two willing volunteers for this programme. One of them actually is a volunteer for the Dogs Trust. That's Gisa Kavanagh. Hi, Gisa.
Hello.
And then we also have with us the volunteer and foster coordinator, Sarah Forty. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
And today they're going to talk about the work of the Dogs Trust, all the opportunities for volunteering, and something special that's happening here, like the new build that's ongoing. And there's an open day coming up on the 19th at Radley Hall, which we want to know about. So, Sarah, your role, how long have you worked here?
I've worked here just over 5 years now, and I've been managing the volunteers for about four, because it's something that I wanted to get involved with straight away.
Did you know that when you came, or was it...
No. Working here, I think you get to see how important the volunteers are and how helpful and useful they are. So I thought it was really nice to help manage them and help encourage more to come and help us, really. Yeah. We couldn't do what we do without them, so I really wanted to get involved.
How many staff work here?
We've got about 36 members of staff, all paid, and then four or five of those are part-time. It is a really busy centre, and even though it seems like a large number of staff, we're definitely on our toes the whole day.
That does seem like a large number of staff. How many dogs would you have here?
We can hold at the moment up to 140, so we're definitely kept busy, and there's always a big waiting list for dogs wanting or needing the kennels as well. And when we move, there'll still be an equally large number of dogs we'll need to help, so the more help we can give those, the better.
Right, so your new build, is that going to extend the number of dogs you can have?
No, there's going to be slightly less kennels, but the idea is their welfare will be improved because of the way the kennels are laid out and designed, that they'll actually be more relaxed and be essentially more rehomable, or appear to be, you know, in kennels there'll be a lot more chilled out, and people will hopefully book them quicker, and then we'll be able to help more dogs through, as well as all the training and things that are in place for when we move. So it's really exciting.
Gisa was talking about the dog that she's fostering at the moment.
Yes, my little Patterdale, Angus.
And Angus was a bit of a handful when he was here, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a little bit worried. He found it difficult having people walking past the kennels. So as soon as a person appeared, he would start spinning in the kennel, then he would perhaps run about and run into the back, and just seemed a bit manic, I suppose. And he just found the whole situation so difficult, really. It didn't make him appealing to even people who liked Patterdales, to just walk past and not looked at him.
He'd actually been with us for a while in kennels. Mm. He'd had several homes, and they haven't worked out for one reason or another. Some of the time it was because the situation in the home wasn't right for him. Mm. Other times it was things beyond control as well. So we just felt that he needed a break from kennels, a bit of TLC and a bit of a holiday. Gisa's one of our experienced long-term foster carers who I would happily give any dog to for some respite. She's very welcoming to all of the dogs, and when we go to visit them, we can't believe it's the same dog that we had in the kennels, to be honest. So Angus is doing the world a good being out in her home with her and Pete.
I think it's just giving the dogs some space so that they can actually be themselves, rather than being put into a false environment. The Dogs Trust do their very best to make all the dogs feel comfortable, but when all is said and done, it's a little kennel, and they get out occasionally for a short walk. So it's not a normal environment for a dog. So if they can go out to a home and have just that space to do what they want, when they want, to get up, walk about, to sit down, to go to sleep, just to do normal things, it calms them down, just like it would calm a human being down, to be able to just relax without lots of noise going on, lots of people talking to you. And that's what the dogs do here. They talk to each other. So all that barking doesn't help with being calm and settled. Mm. So that's what a home does for them, really.
And I suppose it's hard for Angus to get a home whilst he's doing his spinning round. What you're saying is that their behaviour inside the kennel may not be anything like what they're like
exactly
as they get out. Yes. Was there a period where he needed to adjust?
Yes, and when we started off very, very gently, I visited here and visited him in, well, we were in one of the porter cabins because of the new build, and I just sat with him on a few occasions so that he got to know me. And then Sarah and one of the other members of staff brought him out to the house just for a visit, just for half an hour, and he had a little walk around. Then he came back to the kennels, and then the next time they came again with Angus, but he stayed a little bit longer and he seemed a little bit more settled. And then I started just bringing him out for the day, so he didn't actually stay with me overnight. I'd pick him up about 10 o'clock, bring him back about 3 o'clock. It was probably about 3 or 4 days before he actually felt comfortable enough to fall asleep. So he basically came and sat in the house. He had a little sniff around. He went out into the garden and just had a sort of a quiet time where nobody was putting any pressure on him. If he wanted a cuddle, he would have a cuddle. But if he didn't want one, then he didn't have one. He would come to me when he was ready. And after that, once he felt comfortable enough to sleep, that was when we thought it would be okay for him to come out to us. I mean, I had a little bit of a gap in between because I had to do something. And this is the beauty of fostering. If you're committed to something else, then the dogs are supported by the Dogs Trust. So you don't have to have them for the whole period. They can come back into kennels. And he then came out and settled really quickly, didn't he?
And now he sleeps all the time.
And now he sleeps upside down all the time. And he's quite happy.
I mean, Angus is a bit unusual for the fact that he's been with us a while and he would need an experienced foster carer. So the process was a bit longer than we would usually ask for foster carers, from getting the dog from kennel to the home. It can be a lot quicker for first-time foster carers and dogs that don't have as many behavioural quirks as Angus and we think will settle quicker. But we do really appreciate when we have foster carers that are able to give up time like Gisa does and do the to-ing and the fro-ing, albeit 5 minutes from the centre, just to help him settle in quicker and help no end. He's like a different dog.
But I mean, some fostering doesn't have to be about that.
No.
It can be just perhaps an old dog who has come in from being in a home all his life or her life and suddenly finds herself here because the family has passed away and they don't have anywhere to be. And they come in here and suddenly they find themselves in this environment. It's not really nice when you're old to be stuck in a kennel. And fostering is about that as well, and just giving them a little bit of comfort.
Absolutely.
And then they can go off and live the rest of their lives happily.
I mean, the kinds of dogs that we like to pop into foster homes are very young puppies, so they can get all their socialising early, get used to the house sounds and noises and sights, and just meet new people. Like Gisa says, older dogs that have maybe their owners have passed away or they've come in for no fault of their own. The older dogs, sometimes they can really struggle to sleep and eat, and they do pine for their owners if they've never been in a kennel situation before. So the TLC of a foster home is fantastic. Dogs that are quite stressed in kennels, like Angus is, it gives them that break away in the quiet time so we can begin their training and show new owners what the potential in that dog is. And respite care as well, if they're poorly or they've just had major operations, it's much nicer for them to be in a home environment recovering than in the kennel. Even though our kennels will be brand spanking new and fabulous, I'm sure you can't kind of compete with a home environment if the option is there.
Your new build, by making it easier for people to look round, for the dogs to be more chilled, are going to up your rehoming rate, you hope, as well?
I would hope so. We want to help as many dogs as possible. All of the other centres that have been rebuilt recently have seen an increase in the number of dogs they're able to help. Because the kennels are glass fronted, you haven't got to worry about spread of infection, so nobody popping their fingers in when they shouldn't, for example. Mm. It's also a lot quieter there, so more dogs are able to sleep and they're not wound up by any noise that's going on externally, and they're just much nicer. I mean, they're individually heated. they've got these fantastic new pens and runs to spend time in away from the kennel. One has a sand pit, one's got a big water feature for them to play in. So I think the volunteers and the staff are really looking forward to spending time in those with the dogs and seeing what we can train them to do and hopefully introduce public in those as well. It should be fantastic.
Excellent. When will it be finished, do you think?
Well, the move-in date for staff to move all of our bits and pieces is beginning of July. So we should be open to the public on, fingers crossed, as long as everything goes well, on the 14th of July.
That's
not long.
Very soon, isn't it?
I know.
Very soon.
But we're all really excited. It's been a long time coming and we can't wait to get in. We really can't.
Your role as a foster volunteer is a huge commitment. There must be other things that people can do without actually taking dogs into their own home.
Absolutely. We have a merry band of volunteers that we love to bits and we really couldn't do without. Some of them come along to dog walk and spend time with the dogs to give them a break from the kennel and help train them. Some of them come in specifically to help socialise the puppies that we do have on site. Some of them help with the gardening. We absolutely adore the volunteers that come in and help cleaning because it at the moment does take up a couple of hours in the morning. So the quicker we can get the kennels clean, the quicker we can get the dogs out and spend time with them. We also would encourage people to come and help volunteer to get the home visits and home checks done. So we train those volunteers up so they can help us get the dogs home quicker, essentially. The quicker the home check's done, the quicker we can help the dog get to its home. And also in reception, when we've got the new reception built and we can move in, it's very big. We anticipate a lot of public coming down, and the more volunteers we can get to help meet and greet and show people around would be fantastic. Mm. As you can imagine, 140 dogs means over 140 bits of paperwork to do. So
yes,
the more hands on, the better.
Are there ever homes that you don't find suitable for dogs to go to?
Very rarely. There's normally always a dog for somebody. We always manage to find a good match. It's just some will take longer to find than others. Mm. Some homes are quite specific in what they need. They might have lots of young children, lots of other pets in the house. They might have a very busy lifestyle. So we have to then find dogs that would happily fit in with them and that they like. Other people are quite open. We have a lot of first-time dog owners come through looking for advice, and we can help recommend what we think would suit them best, because at the end of the day, we just want what's best for the dog and obviously what's best for the family too. I think more people we're finding are more open to the kinds of breeds they're looking to take. We obviously have a high number of different breeds here. We are quite varied, to be honest.
Yes.
And I know Jesus had various different breeds of foster dog as well.
Lots of different dogs that I never thought I would have.
Mm-hmm. And what we find with the volunteers is the breeds that they didn't think they were that keen on to begin with end up being their favourites.
Yes, but we all look at a dog in a different way, don't we?
Yes.
Especially if you've had a dog of one particular type.
Absolutely.
You home in on those.
I certainly did with the Rottie. She was just my angel. She was just so lovely, and I could have quite happily have kept her. I could keep them all, but I haven't got room. But I would never have thought of having the Rottie, but it's changed my mind about them, and I see them in a completely different way. The same with the Patterdale. I would never have thought of small dog, but he's lovely, and he's
very cheeky.
Wheedled his way into my heart, as they do. But just on that point of matching as well, you're very careful to match the right dog with the right foster home as well. People shouldn't be put off fostering just because they feel that they can't cope with a specific breed or a specific difficulty that a dog might have, because Sarah does go to a lot of trouble to take you around and show you the dogs and tell you all about them. So you don't have to take a dog that you feel that you can't cope with. So I just thought that was mentioning, because I don't want people put off by a thought that they have to take any dog. You can just say no if you don't feel that it doesn't work.
Some volunteers that we get are quite nervous about particular breeds, so we can do nice gentle introductions if they want to get to know them a little bit better. Some volunteers may be a bit wary of bigger dogs, or it might be a specific breed, like I said. So we're more than happy to help give them some gentle guidance and training to help them feel more comfortable around them. And I haven't found one that hasn't worked with. we absolutely adore our volunteers. We do our best to keep them happy and make them as useful as possible and make sure they feel like they're being as useful and helpful as possible. We have got our open day coming up, and I know I'm relying on a lot of them to come and help because it is a really busy day. We couldn't do events like that without our volunteers. We're more than happy to just have volunteers that come along for external events and maybe aren't so keen to work directly with the dogs but still want to help the charity in general. We also have kind of Christmas fairs, and we've got our barn dance in September, which we'd love people to come along to in the new centre, and they will be supported by the volunteers on the day. So we desperately need volunteers, and we love our current ones to bits.
We have social events as well.
We do have social events. We have a Christmas party, which we do specially for volunteers. But this year we're joining our staff and volunteer party together because we think, why not?
That will be a large number of people then.
Hopefully, we're going to do it in the new site. We've got a training barn we can hold it in, and we're really excited about it. It should be really nice to get together, because very rarely are we all in the same place at the same time.
So you have a variety of things that happen every year, really, for fundraising. You have an open day every year?
We have an open day every year, and because of the way the building site is now, when we've finished, it will be, I imagine, at Ragley every year from now on. This year's is on Father's Day, so on the 19th of June up at Ragley. So it's only 10 minutes from the centre, and we need volunteers on the day to help make cakes and bake things to sell, to help on stalls. Jeez is going to be there with a couple of volunteers talking about volunteering if anybody wanted to come along and have a chat with her if they're interested. We're having a dog show there, fun agility for people with dogs, lovely craft stalls, and they can look around the grounds and the house as well. But we do hold smaller events close to the centre throughout the year that volunteers can come and help with, as well as ones that will be smaller but on site as well.
Have you used Ragley Hall as a venue before?
Last year was the first time I've been there with our open day, and it was a lot busier than expected, which is fantastic. So I imagine this year will be twice as busy. I think they used to hold it there a while ago, but it has been on site because people can then look around the kennels. But yeah, it's a really nice venue. It's massive. The dogs can go, people can bring their own. So it's really good for us for our fun day.
Will you be able to bring any of your dogs from here to join in?
Yes, we normally do a little dog parade of about 8 to 12 dogs that are looking for special homes on the day. Last year we had a few of the foster dogs come down who were still looking for homes. Last year our sponsor dog Seamus made an appearance, but I don't know if he's going to be popping along this year. But there's normally lots of dogs looking for homes, and we want to make sure they're highlighted on the day. So yes.
Do your volunteers need training in order to do their work?
Yeah, what we do is if anyone is interested in volunteering, they have an initial chat over the phone or email or at the centre, and we send them an application form. They're then asked to come and attend a health and safety induction, which is just a couple of hours on one day, and then they can start dog walking and getting involved in the basics. If any of them are interested in any of the training aspects or getting involved a bit more, like the home checks and things, we ask them to come along and we will train them up for those. We can basically give them as much training as they need and as they want. For the past 2 years we've been running training sessions which volunteers can sign up to, and we've covered basic obedience, some theory behind dog behaviour, because the more they understand the dogs, the more they can help them, and just general fun things to teach the dogs while they're on site, and things they can do just other than walking, because not all dogs need exercise. Some of them enjoy the quieter time. Some of them need their brain stimulated a little bit more. Some of them, it's brilliant to teach them tricks to show potential adopters. And we also will be making a lot of toys for them later this year to play with in the kennels, so it's a lot more interactive for the volunteers and the staff with the dogs.
What sort of toys keep them occupied the best?
Anything with food in them.
So the Kongs.
Yeah,
and the
Kongs are fantastic, and we do have volunteers that come down and make those for us. Because it's been hot weather, we tend to freeze them, so it takes them a bit longer to eat. They're like lollipops. We've also started with groups of volunteers that come down for the day making something called a snaffle mat. So essentially it's a rubber mat with holes in, and it's had lots of material thread through, so we can sprinkle treats over, and it takes the dogs a little bit longer to find them, and it's really good for them to have have a good sniff and find rather than just being given them all the time. Mm. Makes them work for the food, which they love to do.
It's an idea that's spread into quite a lot of animals in captivity. Once went to Jersey Zoo, where they're famous for their primates, and instead of giving the gorillas a bowl of food, they just threw beans all over the place for them to pick out, which is what they would do, isn't it? That's normal foraging behaviour.
Absolutely, and it's a lot more interesting for them rather than just being given a bowl of food. I mean, don't get me wrong, we give them their breakfast and dinner, but in the middle of the day it's nice to give them something fun to do. Mm. We have two volunteers at the moment called Mary and Julie who are trying their best to raise £10,000 for us by the end of the year to help buy enrichment equipment for our paddocks. So these are big pieces of equipment that we can teach agility on and some extra training and just make the area a lot more interesting for the dogs. They've recently done a overnight stay in our current kennels to help raise money, and they're also holding a fun dog show at the Valley, which used to be called the Twyford Garden Centre, mm-hmm. which is only 10 minutes from here, and that is in July, on the 17th of July, which is a Sunday. So we'd encourage people to come along and support them, and they can meet some of our dogs and volunteers again. We're also having a special visit from one of our ex-residents, Ronell Dog. I don't know if you've seen him on the news recently.
No.
Fantastic little puppy that I fostered when I first started here, and now he's gone on to be an internet sensation
he's
with his football.
Football star.
Is he?
He is, yes.
And we're doing a little reunion with his brothers and sisters on the day there as well, so that's really nice to see. Mm. But we've got some fantastic volunteers that maybe not involved with the dogs day to day, but are really happy to fundraise and get a bit behind the scenes and support us that way. So.
Yes, the people come with a lot of skills, don't they?
Absolutely.
And lots of ideas as well. Mm, and the more people you have, the more ideas. And keeping it varied, I think, makes a difference. Because if you do the same thing day after day, it does get a bit sort of, well, we've done that one. Mm. So it's nice to have lots of people with lots of different ideas.
Do you expect your dogs walked in a particular way? Is there certain aspects of obedience and where they actually are positioned with you when they're walked, or are they allowed on a long lead to sort of forage? How do you like your dogs actually walk?
I mean, we're not strict as such. There are ways that we prefer not to train the dogs. We use lots of positive reinforcement here. So if through training, and especially we love to use treats as a reward here, you can get them to walk to heel. I mean, families are a lot more interested in dogs that can walk nicely on the lead, the ones that pull hard when they're walking them. If anybody isn't sure how to walk the dogs or how to train the dogs, then we just show them and it's not a problem. Some of them do pull a lot because they've never been shown how to walk nicely. And you do get your big bouncy young Labradors and Huskies here that just want to go for miles. And then you get your little oldies that are just happy to plod along in the sunshine and not do a lot else. So training-wise, it's kind of dependent on each dog, but it's always using positive reinforcement methods.
Always notes as well, and the canine carers who deal with them day to day, they do training with the dogs. And if they want you to practice a specific thing, then you can see that the notes will tell you what they're doing with them, so you can reinforce that when you go on your walk.
So each dog has its sort of little logbook.
Absolutely.
But when they're walked, yes. and anything like that. And
because
that
the staff obviously train the dogs, you know, on a day-to-day basis, really. They do as much as they can, can't they, to make them comfortable to go out into new homes and to make them appealing, I suppose. So there are ways of finding out if a dog needs a particular piece of training, you know, if they've started something.
Volunteers like, can help follow that on. Mm-hmm. So there's continuity for the dog, so he doesn't get confused as well. Some of the dogs need help with walking nicely. Some of them need socialising with other dogs. Some of them need to learn how to be comfortable when being touched. We get a lot of nervous dogs through the doors that maybe have never experienced what it's like to have a nice cuddle and a nice tummy rub, so are really unsure when approached by people who want to do that. I mean, it's a shame, but it is the reality that, you know, not all dogs come through fully socialised for one reason or another. So it's our job to help them, like Jesus says, make them as comfortable as possible and as rehomeable as possible. And because we just see ourselves essentially as a stopgap. We don't want them to be here longer than they need to. We just want to help find them, match them with their forever family.
When you talked about your volunteering, Gisa, yes. You said that it became a bit of a family affair.
Yes, my son started the whole process. He decided one morning, he got up and bundled us in the car, didn't tell us where we were going, drove us up here. We'd only just moved into the house. We'd only been there about 3 months. And we came up and we all signed up to do dog walking. And then my son got a job down here for a year, didn't he?
So
yes, my husband comes and he sits with dogs that need a bit of a cuddle in the kennels. He'll go walking with the dogs. We obviously are all involved in the fostering, because if you take a dog home, then the whole family is involved and the whole family has to be, you know, sort of on the same page really and doing the same training. So yes, it did become family event, and it carries on.
Have you found it very difficult to let the dogs go when you've...
Yes, there are lots of tears.
Yeah, from both of us, I think, sometimes.
From everybody. I think it's partly tears of joy as well, because you know that they are going on to something better. So it's a lovely feeling. But also, it's a big hole that they leave, because I'm sure if anybody who's an animal lover will know that animals very quickly get under your skin. They very quickly become part of the family. And I've had them as short as... I had a puppy for 2 weeks, and my longest foster was 7 months. So there are varying times for you having a dog, because it will depend on how quickly they get rehomed. But there's no doubt about it, even the puppy that was only with me for 2 weeks was under my skin.
That Huxley.
And I cried when Huxley went. I think that's part of it, but it's also part of the joy of knowing that they have found something better. They have found a forever life that they can be happy and comfortable in.
That you've helped them find.
Yes, and that you've sort of, in a very small way, you've helped them to move on. But then there's always another dog in the sidelines. There's always another dog down here. And if you walk around, you can see the dogs that need help. And you know that one's gone, yes, but they're happy. And it's great when they send photos, you know, when the new families send photos or updates.
I think that's the best bit for us, really.
It's great. And that makes you cry as well. We've had tears over that. But it's such a worthwhile thing to do. It's one of the best things I've ever done. It really is. And I've done various volunteering jobs in my life. But this one, I think, has been the most fulfilling, apart from my teaching, which that was very fulfilling too. And in a way, it's a very similar sort of thing. But to see a dog who is so frightened and so worried become this confident dog who goes off and lives with somebody else and is happy doing that. It's just great. It's just lovely.
Some of the volunteers that we have at the centre, so they don't foster, they get really involved with the dogs here, and it's really nice when the dogs go home because they've helped them on their journey. Even if it's just a bit of lead work training or that extra cuddle they give them every day, it's making that dog more relaxed and more rehomeable all the time. And if we get updates, it's nice for the volunteers to see them as well, because they've been part of their journey. But it is hard not to let the dogs get to you when they're out in foster homes. They're with you on a one-on-one basis 24 hours a day. I've fostered before, and even though I don't foster at the moment, I still get upset when some of the foster dogs go home because I've dealt with them. So
well, the canine carers here, the staff here, get involved with the dogs, and it affects them, doesn't
it? Does,
when
it does.
When the dog goes, it affects them. I think that is human nature. If you've cared for
it's part of the
another being, then you are going to get upset when they go. The first time I fostered, I didn't know whether I'd be able to do it. And it was a very strange feeling coming down and handing this dog over to somebody else. But there are ways around it. You have to think. You have to get your strategy in place before you come down. And I went straight into another kennel and sat with another dog that I knew was having a few difficulties.
I think the other thing to remember is, inevitably, if you volunteer here or you foster here, a large percentage of those volunteers usually end up adopting a dog.
Do they?
Which is fantastic. But it's hard not to fall for one. And they usually end up adopting a dog that they didn't expect to in a million years. Completely different type or personality to what they were looking for. And I think that's brilliant, because then they've matched on personality rather than looks, and I think that's the most important thing.
I think that's worth saying as well, is that when they volunteer the dog walking, some of them will come down and walk the same dog. So they're building a relationship
Absolutely.
With that dog, aren't they?
Yep.
So some like to come down and just walk any dog, but some volunteers like to come down and walk the
their
same
favourites.
Dog, walk
yeah.
their favourite dogs, or keep to the breeds that they like. And they build a relationship with that dog, and that's very, very important.
Absolutely.
Because then the dog builds a relationship with a human being and feels more comfortable with human beings, and that is important in the rehoming process yeah. as well.
I mean, volunteers are limited to which dogs they're allowed to walk because of behaviour issues and different things, but generally they have a good choice, and it's up to them which they decide to spend time with. So there's not you must walk this dog or that dog. They come along, they're given the options, and then they get to choose who they decide to spend their time with and how long they're here as well. Some come for 5 minutes in between different work shifts, some spend the whole day here, and that's entirely up to them, and we appreciate however long they spend here, because it all benefits the dog and it all helps us as well at the end of the day. It frees us up to help spend more time with dogs that really need it, or give extra training, speaking to the public, all of those bits and pieces that we need to do.
Are there some dogs, when they come in, you're pretty sure that you're going to rehome them quite quickly?
Absolutely.
I met a lovely dog called Hens a minute ago.
He's oh,
very confident.
Big,
I don't
the
think
small
he's,
pony.
Yeah, he's not been here long, has he?
No, he got handed in to us because the owner was having to increase their working hours and therefore leaving him longer in the daytime. So he rang us, said, can we help? We did. I loved him from the get-go. I'm smitten, and I'm really sad that I can't adopt him myself because I'm moving house soon. Yeah. He was quite depressed in kennels. We did all we could for him, but I knew he needed that bit of extra TLC, and he definitely needed to put on some weight. So I rang one of my foster carers who are free most of the year, to be honest, and they usually foster just staffies, so it's a bit of a change because he's about five times the size of their normal foster dog. But they met him, and instantly they were happy to take him home, and he is probably one of the nicest dogs, especially for his size, that I've ever met. He's fantastic. He's done a brilliant job of promoting the scheme in their area, because he'll just plod along, say hello to people, meet other dogs. The foster carers are sending him home tomorrow, so I know they're going to be upset. But they're going on holiday in a few weeks, and they'll go away on holiday for a month, and then when they come back, they'll probably call me straight away and ask me what they can have next. But yeah, he's a gorgeous boy. He'd fit in most families. He's stunning.
Hens is sort of orange, and he has a mastiff's head on probably something that's near a boxer's body, and so he looks a little bit top heavy on the head, but then some mastiffs do anyway.
We're still filling him out, so
but he's quite slight, isn't he? He's quite
is.
Athletic build at the moment.
They're doing a great job of gradually popping weight on him, including having scrambled egg and tea in bed in the morning. So I know they call it the B&B. When if you've got any dogs that would like to come and stay at the B&B for the next few months. But yeah, he's stunning. He is a mastiff cross. He's only 2 years old. He is the size of a small horse, but he's lovely, absolutely lovely.
You've got two old labs in foster at the moment, haven't you?
Yeah.
Who were so worried being here. They're in foster now, aren't they?
Yeah, we've got two old boys. They're about 12 and 13, called Seth and Oliver. They're on the website if you wanted to have a look. Being fostered by a lovely couple who live locally. Because they're older, they were a bit more sensitive to all the noises here, and they were a bit reluctant to eat. So the foster family were happy to keep them together, and we'd like to rehome them together. All they want is somewhere quiet to sleep and have a cuddle. They are really straightforward. All they want is TLC. They gently plod along, and dogs like that, the foster homes, that's what they're made for, just to give them that bit of extra help. Sadly, we haven't got anyone interested in them at the moment, but I'm sure their special someone will come along soon, and they will fit in really nicely to most homes that are just kind of looking
so
for a quieter
they're
dog.
They're so gentle, you know, they just need...
Jesus bias, because she likes black Labradors.
true, but I mean, I saw them very briefly up here, and they just need a bit of love. That's all they need, and they're not going to take an awful lot of looking after, really. And they plod along, as you say. They're not running around like mad things. So if you wanted a gentle giants.
Is it
beautiful.
Much harder to rehome dogs that are used to being together?
Sometimes it's hard with pairs. If they're smaller pairs, say Jack Russells, Chihuahuas, Shih Tzu kind of breeds, they take up less room, and people find it much easier to adopt the smaller dogs together. If they are bigger, and especially bigger and older, they do tend to stay with us a bit longer. With regards to older dogs, we constantly have families through who are looking for older dogs, which is fab. So I wouldn't say they home any less quickly than the others. The kinds of dogs that we find hang around longer with us are black larger dogs. Everybody's looking for the small fluffy, and especially puppies, that, you know, puppies always rehome quickly, and the black dogs are kind of overlooked for whatever reason. Obviously, if we have a blonde retriever type dog in, fly out the door. And Staffies are homing really well at the moment, which is fantastic for them.
There's been a bit of a campaign, hasn't there, to try and break the mold on these dogs.
And I think they need to be. I think they're fantastic dogs, and I'm not just saying that because I work in a rescue. They really are lovely. They're very trainable. They're very people orientated, and as long as you socialise them properly, they're very good with other dogs. They're quite sturdy little things. They love to play rough, but they also love the cuddles on the sofa. I fell in love with a Staffy puppy we had in earlier in the year called Lola, and I fostered her for a couple of nights, and in some ways I wish I never did, because it was really hard to give her back. But she found her forever home with a lovely couple who have two other Staffies, and I know that they give her more than I could. The dogs that tend to struggle in kennels are your collie types, because they're so clever. They get very bored here quite quickly. We do everything we can, but you can't beat a home. And some of your kind of terrier types, who again are used to being busy, even though they're smaller dogs, they're still very intelligent and very much like to be on the go. They need just as much exercise. So we do end up putting a lot of collies and terriers out into foster homes, and a lot of bull breeds as well, because I think it just helps encourage people to take a second look and go up to the foster carers and chat to them a bit more about the breed. They're really good representatives of what you could get if you adopt a bull breed from us.
You get a lot more information when they're out in foster.
Absolutely.
Because you're living with that dog, so you do learn about their little quirks and what they like to do and what they don't like to do, and you're able to give so much more information. I mean, the staff know a lot about the dogs here. Of course, when they go home, it's a different dog you take home then, because it's a different environment. And sometimes people like that extra information, don't they?
Sometimes it's a bit more reassuring for them. We can tell them if they're house trained or if they're not, like she says, what they like and what they don't. We can do a little bit more training with them when they're out. I mean, we do their full behaviour assessment on site, and we tell you as much as we can. But sometimes people like that little bit extra, as we all would. Just so you know exactly how to help that dog when it goes home. With the fostering, I know a lot of people have said before, you know, is it really fair to move on a foster dog if it's so comfortable in its foster home? Why don't they just keep the dog? But at the end of the day, it's so we can help more dogs. And because a dog is nice and settled in that home, we can then easily place them into another home. The foster carers have the hardest part, where they're dealing with their kind of stress levels from being in kennels and the initial settling in period, whereas the people that then adopt those foster dogs, it's a lot easier for them, and we already know what they like and what they don't and how to best.
And the dogs do settle. It was one of my fears, I suppose, when I started fostering, because like Sarah said, I also thought, well, why would you put them in a home and then take them out of that home and give them to somebody else all that upheaval? But actually, I've learnt that they actually settle really quickly and they settle really well. And you know, when you get feedback from the families, you realise that, yes, you were their world, and they've obviously appreciated that. But then they have a new family now who is loving them.
Absolutely.
And they know they're being loved, so they're not upset. And I think it is important to see that side of it as well, and to know that the dogs are not suffering when they move on. You know, they're going somewhere where somebody can give them all of their attention. So they're not going to suffer, they're going to be happy in that home.
And even though we have a lot of volunteers here that can't foster, all that they do for us in kennels is just as good. We can help socialise them with new people here, introduce puppies to sights and sounds, play with them, train them, so they're enriching their kennel life as much as possible. We have our busy day-to-day jobs to do here as canine carers on site, and the volunteers help us give the dogs that bit extra and help us find their homes quicker.
And also they can give feedback, so anything they've learnt on the walk, they can feed back and tell the staff. So if there's something that they thought perhaps wasn't going quite right with the dog and they've suddenly seen an improvement, they can feed that back. So that goes on the record. So if somebody asks about that dog, they've got that extra information. So it all helps. Any contact with any person in the centre is a good thing for the dogs, because it is going to take them that one step nearer to having a home.
Absolutely. Even the nervous dogs that we have in, or the dogs that are maybe not on show to the public, we only have a small handful of those because they need that extra bit of help. We still can integrate volunteers to work with them eventually, once they've had their training, and we can slowly make them more aware of different people. And
I had one that was in that block.
Yes.
And he eventually came home to me as a foster dog, and is now living in Wales and very, very happy.
Very happy.
Very, very happy. So, you know, and that dog was very nervous. He wouldn't come out the back kennel. He wouldn't interact with anybody.
But you don't have to be incredibly physically fit to volunteer here.
No, I'm
people
not.
That would just, I don't know. There's people that are just happy to sit quietly in the kennels with them, give them a gentle fuss, or maybe follow our lead with the training. So it's not incredibly physical all the time. Some of it needs a lot more slowly, slowly, gentle approach. So I would encourage, you know, everybody from all walks of life to come along. As long as you're over 18, you're more than welcome to come and volunteer and apply. We always need as much help as we can get. And with the rebuild, it should be fabulous facilities for us to spend more time with the dogs in.
You only have to see a dog with somebody who is a wheelchair user or who has a disability, and you realise that giving time and attention is much more important than being able to run a mile with your dog.
Yeah,
I mean, we've got volunteers that will happily run around the fields with the dogs and tire them out that way, but we've got other volunteers that are maybe that little bit older or just less mobile and are happily will sit there, treat them, train them, because you don't have to run around to train them, and just give them that bit of TLC that they need. I don't know if you saw the programme that was on a couple of nights ago about Rescue Dog to Super Dog. We had some Dogs Trust dogs on there, and it was fantastic to show you what potential the rescue dogs have with people with disabilities and just different needs. They've all got so much potential here, and I know it's hard to see. We get a lot of public that will just walk on past dogs that are barking at them or jumping around, but they're normally completely different when you get them out of the kennels. We do the best we can with the facilities that we have, and I know it'll be a lot better when we move, but you can't beat that one-on-one time with the dog. Anybody who says anything different about rescue dogs, I don't believe it. Come and meet some of these guys, because they are fab.
Do you always neuter dogs when they leave?
We do. We neuter them before they leave site, or if they're too young to do so, we give them a voucher to get the dogs done and check up on that. Because there's such a high stray problem everywhere, you know, there's lots of people are breeding dogs in the right way and in the wrong way. We don't see the need. There's so many dogs here. We don't want to create a problem with all the breeding. And then lots of them that we're getting are from puppy farms, and they've been breeding their whole lives. The last thing they want to do or need to do is have another litter. We've got a gorgeous little dog in at the moment, and it's obvious that she's been used for breeding for a long, long time and probably had more litters than she should ever have done. But she's got the sweetest little temperament, and you think once we've got her healthy enough to spay, then her breeding days are over and she can enjoy her life running around.
Relax.
Rather than kept somewhere quiet and just used for breeding. We microchip all the dogs here as well, as the law from April, and we offer free microchipping all year round to the public that want to get their dogs
that
chipped.
That's very kind of you, isn't it? Often there is a small charge just for the chip, because you're having to fund that, aren't you?
Absolutely, but at the end of the day, we don't want somebody's stray dog ending up here when they can just be reunited with their owners
quickly. Well,
that's going
to cost even more money, isn't it? Mm. So it's cheaper to chip a dog than to have it end up in a rescue centre where it's going to have to be looked after for months.
What we do find is that owners don't keep the details on the chip up to date, so we get dogs in, we scan them and we ring the number and they've moved. So it's really important to keep their details up to date, which they can update on the website, normally with Petlog or whichever company they've got the dog chipped with. But it's really important to chip, and we've had so many happy endings here from dogs being reunited with their owners. It's fantastic.
Because I believe you have to claim your dog quite quickly, don't you? Isn't it after 7 days?
I believe, yeah. Most local pounds say hold the dogs for 7 days, and if they haven't, nobody's contacted them about the dog, then they will place it with a local rescue charity or another pound. We get a lot from our local dog warden, all different breeds, all shapes and sizes. So it just goes to show how many go stray. Some of them are puppies, some of them are oldies. We're being all eco-friendly when we move. I believe there's lots of solar panels being installed and things in the fields to help run the site. And we get lots of donations in for food, blankets, bedding. So we obviously use a lot of those before we go and buy anything to help keep costs to a minimum. But if you think every dog here is fed every day, every dog is neutered, microchip vaccinated, at least their first part of their vaccination before they go home. They all get treats on a daily basis and toys.
Medicines if they're not well.
Yeah, medication.
Worming, anti-flea.
Worming, flea, yeah. Mm. So they get all of that before they leave. And if you think we're charging £120 to adopt a dog, and it costs probably just a bit more than that to get them just neutered, we don't see the point in charging lots because we just want them to find a home. Mm. If a dog comes into the centre with an existing medical condition, it can't be treatable immediately, it's going to be more of a long-term condition, we help run something called the shared adoption scheme, which means we will help cover the costs for that condition for the rest of the dog's life, because we don't want a dog to stay here purely because somebody can't afford it, especially with the older dogs. Recently we had a little diabetic Pomeranian in. So he needed daily insulin injections. So we popped him in a foster home with an ex-nurse who did a fantastic job of giving him his insulin, and he was a good boy for having it done. And then we will now help towards the cost of that with his new owner that adopted him, who also is diabetic, just by chance. And we wouldn't want him to still be sat here just because nobody could afford his insulin.
That's quite a point, because you can't get insurance for existing conditions, can you?
No, I believe not. We work with Pet Plan, who offer new owners 4 weeks free pet insurance. And they also help cover dogs regardless of their age if they're adopted through Dogs Trust, because a lot of policies will stop if the dog is over 8, for example. Mm. But Pet Plan, if you've adopted a dog through Dogs Trust, if you want to continue the cover after 4 weeks, they're more than happy to do that, which is fabulous. Mm. Which means more dogs are getting treated for everything that they need, really.
On the point of cost, actually, I don't think we covered that. No. With the fostering, it doesn't cost the foster family anything to foster a dog from Dogs Trust, because you supply everything. They supply the bedding, they supply food, they supply any medication. So it's not going to cost you anything. If anybody's worrying about, oh, well, I can't really afford a dog, they won't have to find a cost. And actually, that's quite a nice way of having a dog if you can't afford them, because dogs are expensive to have.
They are.
You know, you have to feed them, you have to make sure that they're well, you have to give them bedding and toys and treats, and it can be one of the things that will stop a family from having a dog, because they can't afford it. And I think fostering actually would be a good way to have that experience of having the dog, and having that cost covered for you. I just think it's such a wonderful scheme.
The only thing that we ask from foster carers really is their time and a space on their sofa, usually, because even though we encourage dogs not to, they still end up on the sofas and beds. I know we do ask that they're able to bring the dog to and from the centre to meet potential adopters and for vet checks and things, but generally it shouldn't cost them a penny. Some foster carers choose to supply extra toys and treats for the dogs. I know a lot of my dogs that are out over Christmas last year had extra presents from their foster carers, but really it shouldn't cost you a penny. It's just
your time and love. That's all you need to have. And I think, you know, a lot of people who love dogs, you haven't got one in there. But you do foster dogs with people who've got dogs as well.
Oh, absolutely. If they've got resident dogs, sometimes it can do our more nervous residents the world of good. So we place some of the dogs we get from Ireland, for example, have always lived with other dogs but are not so used to people. So if we place them into a foster home with a dog that's already nice and relaxed and happy to say hello to everybody, that can really help bring them along and encourage them to be more confident around people. Again, if somebody has cats or children, we just try and match the dog to the situation. We do have a couple of families that have babies and young toddlers. We're just a bit more careful about which dogs we're happy to place out. Also cats, We're not going to give you an ex-racing greyhound, for example, if you have a cat.
Could be fun.
Yeah, but we do have dogs through that have lived with cats previously, so we know the history. Or we take a lot of our dogs up to the cat's protection just along the road to give us an idea of what they would be like around the cat. Or we can bring the foster dog out to your home and try it to see if needs be. But yeah, we've got such a variety of foster carers and volunteers here. The large majority of the foster carers at the moment are retired or newly or work part-time. But we do have a couple of ladies that contact me in between big breaks from work. So say they've got a couple of weeks free. Have you got any post-op care that you would like us to have for a couple of weeks? Or a couple of puppies, because they rehome very quickly. But the volunteers here, you know, I have work experience students which are only just turned 18. We have a lot of retired people. We have a lot of people that work full time and actually want something a bit more physical to do if they have an office job and they need to get out and be out in the outdoors. We had a couple of volunteers last year that joined just to encourage them to lose more weight by walking the dogs.
Yeah.
And some that can't have a dog at home for whatever reason, so come to get their doggy fix down at the Dogs Trust.
Yes. So lots of different ways to help if you can give some time from a little
Absolutely.
To a lot. Yeah. And if you want to support the Dogs Trust, there are the events like this the 19th of June at Radley Hall. There's your fun day.
Yep.
And did you say you had
We had another dog show. Here? Yeah, we've got our next fundraiser will be mid-July on the 17th, which will be at the Valley. We have another fundraiser in September, which will be the barn dance, which will be on site. There's going to be a pig roast dancing. I believe there will be a bar. and then I imagine there'll be a Christmas fair, and we'll have our volunteer Christmas party if any of you have joined us by then, and we can invite you along and you can meet everybody.
And you mentioned donations of blankets,
anything really. The only thing we aren't able to take here really are duvets and pillows, but duvet covers, towels, we go through a lot of bathing the dogs, especially in winter when it's wet and muddy. Food donations, lots of toys, we go through loads of toys and treats, and we also take donations for the charity shop here as well, which we can pass along to the charity shop.
So many ways to help the Dogs Trust however you can.
Absolutely.
It's been an inspiring programme, knowing the real ins and outs of how you home your dogs and how you look after them.
They do a great job here. They really do.
So do you guys.
Well, the volunteers help, but you do the main bit. But
thank you very much.
Thank you
for talking to me today.